we shut those bitches up yet? Ashford snapped. The suppression teams are arriving at the Colonial Administrative Offices, sir, Jojo said, and then, a moment later, they're encountering some resistance. Ashford smiled. Do we have targeting? He asked. Sir, one of the other guards said. Are the comm laser's targeting systems online? Yes, they're responsive. Well, while they mop up downstairs, let's line up our shot, shall we? Yes, sir. Clarissa kept hold of a handle on the wall absently, watching the captain and his men coordinating. It was hard for her to remember how small the ring was, and how vast the distances they'd traveled to be here. She had to admire the precision and care that they would need to destroy it. The beauty of it was almost surgical. Behind her, the security station popped and clicked. Among the alerts, she heard the murmur of a familiar voice lifted in fear. She looked around. No one was paying any attention to her, so she pushed herself gently back. The security station monitor was still on the newsfeed. Monica Stewart looked ashen under her makeup, her jaw set and her lips thin. Anna, beside her, was squeezing the tip of one thumb over and over anxiously. Another man was propped between them in a medical gurney. Anything we can to cooperate, the earnest man was saying into the camera. Thank you, Lieutenant Williams, Monica Stewart said. I hate to add a complicating note to all this, but I've just been informed that armed men have arrived outside the studio and we are apparently under attack at the moment. She laughed nervously, which Clarissa thought was probably newsfeed anchor code for, oh my God, I'm going to die on the air. Anna's voice came in a moment before the cameras cut to her. This is an extreme situation, Anna said, but I think something like this is probably going on in every ship that's listening to us right now. We're at the point where we, as a community, have to make a choice, and we're scared and grieving and traumatized. None of us is sure what the right thing to do would be, and in the background, the unmistakable popping of slug throwers interrupted Anna for a moment. Her face paled, but she only cleared her throat and went on. And violence is a response to that fear. I hope very much that we can come together, though, and...
She'll go down talking, Cortez said.
Clarissa hadn't heard him come in behind her, hadn't sensed him approaching.
I have tremendous respect for that woman.
But you think she's wrong?
I think her optimism is misplaced, Cortez said.
If we do escalate our attacks on the station and the ring, Anna said, we have to expect that the cycle will go on, getting bigger and more dangerous until one side or the other is destroyed. And I wish... What do you think she'd say about your pessimism? Clarissa asked. Cortez looked up at her, his eyes wide with surprise and amusement.
My pessimism?
Clarissa fought the sudden, powerful urge to apologize. What else would you call it?
We've looked the devil in the eyes out here, Cortez said. I would call it realism.
You didn't look into the devil's eyes, she thought. You saw a bunch of people die. You have no idea what real evil is. Her memory seemed to stutter, and for a moment she was back on the Cerisier, Ren's skull giving way under her palm. There's a difference between tragedy and evil, and I am that difference.
Captain, they're taking fire at engineering.
Cortez turned back toward the bridge and launched himself awkwardly through the air. Clarissa took a last look at Anna on the screen, leaning forward and pressing the air with her hands as if she could push calm and sanity through the camera and into the eyes of anyone watching. Then she followed Cortez.
How many down? Ashford demanded.
No information, sir, Jojo said. I have a video feed.
The monitor blinked to life. The engineering deck flickered, pixelated, and came back. A dozen of Ashford's men were training guns at a pressure door that was stuck almost a third of the way closed. Ashford strained against his belts, trying to get closer to the image. Something, a tiny object or a video feed artifact, floated across the screen, and everything went white. When the image came back, Ashford said something obscene. Armed people poured through the opening like sand falling through an hourglass. Clarissa recognized Jim Holden by the way he moved, the intimacy of long obsession making him as obvious as her own family would have been. And so the tall figure beside him had to be Naomi, whom Melba had almost killed. And then, near her, the only one walking in the Null G environment, Carlos Baca. Bull, the head of security and Ashford's nemesis. He walked slowly across the deck, his real legs strapped together and his mechanical ones lumbering step by painful step. One of Ashford's people tried to fire and was shot, his body twisting in the air in a way that reminded her of seeing a caterpillar cut in half. She realized that the sound she was hearing was Ashford cursing under his breath. He didn't seem to stop for breath. "Lock down the perimeter," Ashford yelled. "Ruiz! Ruiz, we have to fire! We have to fire now!" "I can't," the woman's voice said. "We don't have a connection." "I don't care if it's stable, I have to fire now." "It's not unstable, sir," the woman said. "It's not there." Ashford slammed his fist against the control panel and grimaced. She didn't know if he'd broken his knuckles, but she wouldn't have been surprised. For the next 15 minutes, they watched the battle play out, the invading force sweeping through the engineering deck. Clarissa tried to keep tabs on where Holden and Naomi were, the way she might watch a dramatic show for one or two favorite minor actors.
"Redirect the suppression teams," Ashford said.
Yes. Ashford turned toward Jojo. The guard's face was pale.
"I'm having trouble getting responses from the controls. I think they're locking us out."
Ashford's rage crested, and then sank into a kind of deathly calm. He floated in his couch, his hands pressed together, the tips of both index fingers against his lower lip.
"Environmental controls aren't responding," Jojo said, his voice taking on the timbre of near panic. "They're changing the atmosphere, sir."
"Environmental suits," Ashford said. "We'll need environmental suits."
Clarissa sighed and launched herself across the cabin to the open access panels.
"What are you doing?"
Ashford shouted at her. She didn't answer. The internal structure of the behemoth wasn't that different from any other bridge, though it did have more redundancy than she'd expected. If it had been left in its original form, it would have been robust. But the requirements of a battleship were more rigorous than the elegant generation ship had been, and some of the duplicate systems had been repurposed to accommodate the PDC's Gauss guns and torpedoes. She turned a monitor on, watching the nitrogen levels rise in the bridge. Without the buildup of carbon dioxide, they wouldn't even feel short of breath, just a little lightheaded and then out. She wondered whether Holden would let them die that way. Probably Holden wouldn't have. Bull, she wouldn't bet on. It didn't matter. Wren had trained her well. She disabled remote access to their environmental systems with the deactivation of a single circuit.
"Sir, I have Atmo control back," Jojo shouted.
"Well, get us some goddamn air then," Ashford shouted.
Clarissa looked at her work with a sense of calm pride. It wasn't pretty, and she wouldn't have wanted to leave it that way for long, but she'd done what needed doing, and it hadn't shut down the system. That was pretty good, given the circumstances.
"How much have you got?" Ashford snapped. "I've got mechanical, atmosphere,
Everything local to command, sir.
Like a thank you would kill you? Clarissa thought as she floated back toward the door to the security station.
Can we do it to them? Ashford asked. Can we shut off their air?
No, Jojo said. We're just local. But at least we don't need those suits.
Ashford's scowl changed its character without ever becoming a smile.
Suits, he said. Jojo, do we have access to the powered armor Pa took from those Martian Marines?
Jojo blinked, then nodded sharply.
Yes, sir. I want you to find 4 people who'll fit in them. Then I want you to go down to engineering and get me control of my ship.
Jojo saluted, grinning.
Yes, sir. And Jojo, anyone gets in your way, you kill them. Understand? 5 by 5.
The guard unstrapped and launched himself toward the hallway. She heard voices in the hall, people preparing for battle. We have to expect the cycle will go on, getting bigger and more dangerous until one side or the other is destroyed. Who said that? It seemed like something she'd just heard. Under local control, the ventilation system had a slightly different rhythm. The exhalations from recyclers coming a few seconds closer together and lasting half as long. She wondered why that would be. It was the sort of thing Ren would have known. It was the sort of thing she only noticed now. Ren. She tried to imagine him now. Tried to see herself the way he would see her. She was going to die. She was going to die and make everyone else safe by doing it. It wouldn't bring him back to life, but it would make his dying mean something. And it would avenge him. In her mind's eye, she still couldn't see him smiling about it. Half an hour later, the 4 people Jojo had selected came into the room awkwardly. The power of the suits made moving without crashing into things difficult. The cowling shone black and red, catching the light and diffusing it. She thought of massive beetles.
We've got no ammunition, sir, one of them said, Jojo.
His voice was made artificially flat and crisp by the suit speakers.
Then beat them to death, Ashford said. Your main objective is the reactor. If all you can get is enough for us to fire the laser, we still win. After that, I want Bull and his allies killed. Anyone who's there that isn't actively fighting alongside you count as an enemy. If they aren't for us, they're against us.
Yes, sir.
Sir, one of the men at the controls said.
What?
I think we have someone in the external elevator shaft, sir.
Assault force?
No, but they may be trapping it.
Clarissa turned away. In the security station, the news feed was still spooling. Women's voices punctuated by occasional gunfire. Ashford's men hadn't taken the station yet. She wondered whether he'd let his men gun down Monica Stewart and Anna on a live feed where everyone could see it. Then she wondered how he'd prevent it from happening, even if he wanted to. It wasn't like there would be any consequences. If they won and blew the ring, they'd all die here, one way or another. A few premature deaths along the way should be neither here nor there. When what came next didn't matter, anybody could do anything. Nothing had consequences. Except that everyone always dies. You're distracting yourself from something. Cortez floated in the security booth itself, his face lit from below by the monitor. He looked over as she approached, his smile gentle and calm.
Ashford's sending men down to retake engineering, she said.
Good. That's very good.
On the Corvusier, a brown-skinned woman was saying,
you'll know me. You can trust me. All we're asking is that you shut down the reactor for a few hours and pull the batteries from the emergency backups. Power down the systems so we can get out of here.
They value their own lives so much, Cortez said. They don't think about the price their survival brings with it. The price for everybody.
They don't, Clarissa agreed. But something sat poorly with the words. Something itched.
Do you believe in redemption?
Of course I do, Cortez said. Everything in my life has taught me that there is nothing that fully removes us from the possibility of God's grace, though sometimes the sacrifices we must make are painfully high.
If we can just come together, Anna said on the screen, leaning in toward the camera. A lock of red hair had come out of place and fell over her left eye. Together, we can solve this.
What about you? Cortez asked.
He put his hand against her back.
Do you believe in redemption?
No, she said. Just sacrifice.
Mao, Ashford barked from the other room. Get out here.
Clarissa floated to the doorway. The captain looked grayer than he had before. There was swelling around his eyes that would have been dark circles if they'd had any gravity.
Captain? You understand how all this crap is wired up?
A little, she said.
I've got something I need you to do.
Chapter 47. Holden. The elevator shaft that ran outside the entire 2 kilometer length of the behemoth's drum section stretched out ahead of him. With Naomi consolidating control over the ship, most of the ancillary systems were down or unsafe to use. The primary elevator was locked at the shaft's midway point. There was a secondary elevator in storage near the top of the shaft, but it could only be activated if the first elevator was removed from the tracks and locked down. So instead of a comfortable 4-minute ride, the trip to the bridge was a 2-kilometer-long zero-G float through hard vacuum, with a big steel and ceramic box blocking the midpoint. It could be worse. From the security camera streams Naomi had been able to dig into, it didn't look like Ashford expected anyone to come at the bridge that way. He'd fortified his position at the command level transition point once word had gone out about the attack on engineering, but so far they hadn't reinforced the elevator shaft at all. They'd been expecting to hold both ends, and apparently it hadn't occurred to them yet that they didn't. Bull had warned him that Ashford might be losing his mind under the stress of the situation, but he wasn't a stupid man. He'd had a notably mistake-free career as an OPA captain up to that point, which was why he'd seemed the safe choice to Fred Johnson. Holden couldn't count on him to make mistakes that would make things easy. But if Naomi won out in engineering, it wouldn't matter. By the time they reached the bridge, everyone there would be blissfully asleep. Holden had the broadcast from Radio Free Slow Zone playing at low volume in his helmet. Anna and Monica were still explaining to the flotilla about the need to shut down all the power in a back-and-forth sort of interview format, while occasional volleys of gunfire popped in the background. Somehow, it made the crazy things Anna was saying seem sane. Holden gave Monica points for knowing it would work that way, and so far, the sounds of fighting seemed light. Amos was probably bored. They'd made a plan, and so far everything was more or less going the way they'd hoped. The thought left Holden increasingly terrified. Without warning, the wall-mounted LEDs in the shaft went out. Holden turned on his suit lights, but didn't slow his climb. He threw a strange double shadow on the bulkhead when Corin's suit lights came on.
I'm not sure if that means we're winning or losing, he said, just to have something to say.
Corin grunted at him noncommittally.
I see the lift.
Holden tilted his torso back to shine the suit lights farther up the shaft. The bottom of the elevator was visible 100 meters ahead as a wall of metal and composite.
There's supposed to be a maintenance hatch we can open.
Corin held up a fist in assent, and while still drifting up the elevator shaft, began rummaging around in the duffel she'd brought from engineering. She pulled out a handheld plasma torch. Holden rotated his body to hit the bottom of the elevator feet first, then kicked on his boot magnets. He walked over to the hatch and tried to open it. But, as they suspected, it was locked from the inside. Without waiting to be asked, Corin started cutting it open with her torch.
"Bo, you there?"
Holden asked, switching to the agreed-upon channel.
"Trouble?
Just cutting the elevator right now. Wanted to check in."
"Well," Bo said, drawing the word out, "we're hitting either home runs or strikes here. We own the essential systems. We've got the laser down, and we're working on killing the reactor."
"What are we missing?" Holden asked.
Corin's torch sputtered and went out, and she began a quiet, profanity-laced conversation with herself as she replaced the power pack with another from her duffel.
"Naomi can't get into the bridge systems. They've got her totally locked out, which means no knockout gas for the entry."
Which meant, by last count, him and Corin fighting their way past at least 15 of Ashford's people, and possibly more. Through a narrow doorway, down a long corridor with no cover. It would make the entry into engineering look like a walk in the park.
"We can't do that with two people," Holden said. "There's no chance."
Corin, who'd been listening in on her radio, looked up. She hit the elevator hatch with one gauntleted fist, and the cut piece fell inside, edges glowing dull red. She made no move to enter, waiting for the outcome of his conversation with Bull. Her expression was blank. It could have meant anything.
"We're sending some help, so sit tight at the command deck entry hatch and wait for—"
He stopped, and Holden could hear someone speaking to him, though the words were too low to make out. It sounded like Naomi.
"What's up?"
Holden asked, but Bull didn't answer. An increasingly animated conversation happened on Bull's end for several minutes. Bull's replies were fragments that, without context, meant nothing to Holden. He waited impatiently.
"Okay. No problem," Bull finally said.
"Bigger than the we can't get into the bridge without dying problem?"
"Yeah,"
Bull said. Holden felt his stomach drop.
"Naomi caught something on a security cam they missed in the corridor outside the bridge. Four people in power armor just left the command deck. It's the armor we took from the Martians. No way to track them, but I can guess where they're headed."
There was only one place Ashford would be sending that much firepower. Engineering. "Get out," Holden said, more panic in his voice than he'd hoped to hear.
"Get out now."
Bull chuckled. It was not a reassuring sound.
"Oh, my friend, this will be a problem for you before it is for us."
Holden waited. Corin shrugged with her hands and climbed inside the elevator to open the upper hatch. No need to cut it. The locks were on the inside.
"There are only three ways to get at us," Bull continued. "They can go down through the drum, but that's messy. The maintenance corridor on the other side of the drum can't be accessed when the drum is rotating. That leaves one good way to head south on this beast."
"Right through us," Holden said.
"Yep. So, guess what? Your mission just changed."
"Delaying action," Corin said.
"Give the lady a prize. We still might be able to win this thing if we can buy Naomi a little more time. You'll get to buy it for her."
"Bull," Holden said. "There are two of us with light assault rifles and sidearms here. Those people have force recon armor. I've watched someone work in that gear up close. We won't be a delay. We'll be a cloud of pink mist they fly through at full speed."
"Not quite that fast. I'm not an idiot. I pulled all the ammo from the suits, and as an added precaution,
I went ahead and yanked the firing contacts in the guns. That's good news, actually, but can't they just tear us limb from limb?
Yeah, Bo said.
So, don't let them grab you, if you can avoid it. Buy as much time as you can. Bull out.
Holden looked at Corin, who was looking back at him, the same blank expression on her broad face. His heart was beating triple time. Everything took on a sense of almost painful reality. It was like he'd just woken up. He was about to die.
Last stand time, he said, trying to keep his voice steady. This is as good a place as any.
She pointed at the boxy and solid-looking elevator.
Use the upper hatch for cover. They'll have to come at us without any cover of their own, and without guns they'll have to close and engage at point blank. We can dump a lot of fire into them as they approach.
Corin, Holden said, have you ever seen one of those suits at work?
Nope. Does it change what we need to do here?
He hesitated.
No, he said. I guess it really doesn't.
He pulled the assault rifle off his back and left it floating next to him. He checked his ammo. Still the same 6 magazines it had been when he stuffed them in the bandolier. Nothing to do but wait. Corin found a spot by the hatch where she could hook 1 foot under a handhold set into what would be the wall under thrust. She settled in, staring up the elevator shaft through her sights. Holden tried doing the same, but got antsy and had to start moving around.
Naomi, he said, switching to their private channel and hoping she was still on the radio.
I'm here, she said after a few seconds.
Holden started to reply, then stopped. Everything that came into his head to say seemed trite. He'd been about to say that he'd loved her since the moment he met her, but that was ludicrous. He'd barely even noticed Naomi when they first met. She'd been a tall, skinny engineer. When he got to know her better, she'd become a tall, skinny, and brilliant engineer, but that was it. He felt like they'd eventually become friends, but the truth was he could barely remember the person he'd been back on the Canterbury now. Everyone had lost something in the wake of the protomolecule. The species as a whole had lost its sense of its own importance, its primacy in the universal plan. Holden had lost his certainty. When he thought back to the man he'd been before the death of the Cant, he remembered a man filled with righteous certainty. Right was right, wrong was wrong, you drew the lines thus and so. His time with Miller had stripped him of some of that. His time working for Fred Johnson had, if not removed, then filed down what remained. A sort of creeping nihilism had taken its place. A sense that the protomolecule had broken the human race in ways that could never be repaired. Humanity had gotten a 2 billion year reprieve on a death sentence it hadn't known it had. But time was up. All that was left was the kicking and screaming. Oddly enough, it was Miller who had given him his sense of purpose back, or whatever the Miller construct was. He couldn't really remember that version of himself who'd known exactly where all the lines were drawn. He wasn't sure of much of anything anymore. But whatever had climbed up off of Venus and built the ring, it had built Miller too. And it had wanted to talk to him. A small thing, maybe. The new Miller didn't make much sense. It had an agenda that it wasn't explaining. The protomolecule didn't seem particularly sorry for all the chaos and death it had caused, but it wanted to talk, and it wanted to talk to him. Holden realized he'd found a lifeline there. Maybe there was a way out of all the chaos. Maybe he could help find it. He recognized that latching on to the idea that the protomolecule, or at least their agent Miller, had picked him as their contact, fed all of his worst inclinations to arrogance and self-importance. But it was better than despair. And now, only starting to see that murky path out of the hole the protomolecule had dug and humanity had hurled itself into with self-destructive gusto, now he was about to be killed because of yet another petty human with more power than sense. It didn't seem fair. He wanted to live, to see how humanity bounced back. He wanted to be part of it. For the first time in a long time, he felt like he might be able to turn into the kind of man who could make a difference. And he wanted to explain this to Naomi, to tell her that he was turning into a better person, the kind of person who would have seen her as more than just a good engineer all those years ago, as if he could, by being a different person now, retroactively fix the shallow, vain man he'd been then. Maybe even make himself worthy of her. "I like you," he said instead. "Jim," she replied after a moment. Her voice was thick. "I've enjoyed your company ever since we met. Even when you were just an engineer and shipmate, you were a very likable one." There was only a faint static hiss on the radio. Holden pictured Naomi retreating into herself, letting her hair fall across her eyes to hide them in that way she did when she was in an uncomfortable emotional situation. Of course, that was silly. With no gravity, her hair wouldn't do that. But the image made him smile. "Thank you," he said, letting her off the hook. "Thank you for everything." "I love you, Jim," she finally said. Holden felt his body relax. He saw his coming death, and wasn't afraid of it anymore. He'd miss all the good stuff to follow, but he'd help make it happen. And a very good person loved him. It was more than most people got in a lifetime. A low screech started, which cycled up into a howl. For a second, Holden thought Naomi was screaming into her headset. He almost started comforting her before he realized he could feel the vibration in his feet. The sound wasn't coming across the radio. It was transmitting through his boots on the elevator wall. The entire ship was vibrating. Holden placed his helmet against the wall to get a better sound, and the scream of the ship was almost deafening. It stopped after an endless minute with an ear-shattering bang. Silence followed. "What the fuck?" Corin said under her breath. "Naomi! Bull! Anyone still on the line?" Holden yelled, thinking that whatever had happened had torn the ship apart.
"Yeah," Bull said. "We're here."
"What?" Holden started.
"Mission change," Bull continued.
"That sound was them slamming the brakes on the habitat drum. Claustrophobic inertia change 2.0. There are a lot of people in that drum getting thrown around right now."
"Why would they do that? Just to stop the broadcast?"
"Nope,"
Bull said with a tired sigh. He sounded like a man who'd just been informed he was going to have to pull a double shift.
"It means they think we fortified the elevator shaft, and they're coming the other way."
"We're on our way back," Holden said, gesturing at Corin to follow him.
"Negative," Bull said. "If they get the laser back online here while Ashford's still sitting at that control panel, we lose."
"So what? We're supposed to get up there, break into the bridge, and shoot everyone while their guys are down there, breaking into engineering and shooting all of you?"
Bull's sigh sounded tired.
"Yeah."
Chapter 48. Bull. They came out of the maintenance shaft like an explosion. Four black and red monsters in roughly human shape. Bull and the people he'd managed to gather opened fire as soon as they saw them. A dozen guns against a maelstrom.
"Don't let them get to the reactor controls," Bull shouted.
"Roger that," one of the Earthers said.
"Any idea how we stop them, sir?"
He didn't have one. He unloaded his pistol's clip with one hand, driving the mech backward across the deck with the other. One of the Martian Marines cut across overhead, rifle blazing. Small, white marks appeared on the breastplate of the nearest attacker, like a child's thumbprints on a window. The man in powered armor reached the nearest workstation, ripped the crash couch out of the decking with one hand, and threw it like a massive baseball. The couch sang through the air and shattered against the bulkhead where it hit. If there had been anyone in its path, it would have been worse than a bullet. Bull kept backing up. When his clip ran out, he gave his full attention to the driving mech. The last of the attackers out of the shaft tried to leap across the room, but the armor's amplification made it more like a launch. The red and black blur careened off the far wall with a sound like a car wreck. "And that," Sergeant Verbinski said across the radio, "is why we spend 6 months training before they put us in those things." He sounded amused. Good thing somebody was. Fighting in Null G complicated the tactics of a firefight, but the basic rule stayed the same. Hold territory, stay behind cover, have someone there to keep the other side busy when you had to move. The problem, Bull saw almost at once, was that they didn't have anything that would damage their opponents. The best they could do was make loud noises and trust the people in the battle armor to give in to their reflexive caution. It wouldn't win the war. Hell, it would barely postpone losing the battle.
"Naomi," Bo said, "how are you doing back there?"
"I can dump the core, power this whole bastard down. Just give me 3 more minutes, she said. He could hear the focus and drive in her voice, the determination. It didn't count for shit.
"That's not going to happen," he said.
Just hold on.
"They're coming back that way now," Bo said, "and there's not a goddamn thing we can do to stop them."
The four attackers bounced through engineering like grasshoppers, massive bodies crashing into walls and consoles, shearing off bits of the bulkhead where they scraped against it. At this point, their best hope was that the enemy force would beat itself to death against the walls. Bull pulled back toward the entryway to the drum, then took a position behind a crate and started firing at the enemy, trying to draw them toward him. If he could get the enemy out into the habitation drum, he might be able to close down the transition point and make the bastards dig back through, and might even give Naomi the minutes she needed. The people in power armor didn't seem to notice he was there. One caught a desk, the steel bending in the suit's glove, and started pulling hand over hand toward the reactor controls.
"Can anybody stop that guy?" Bull asked.
No one on the frequency answered. He sighed.
"Naomi, you've got to leave now."
"Core's out. I can drop the grid, too. Just a few more minutes."
"You don't have them. Come out now, and I'll try to get you back in when things cool down."
"But
you're no good to anyone dead," he said.
The channel went quiet, and for a long moment he thought the belter had been caught, been killed. Then she came sailing out of the hallway, leading with her chin, her good arm and hair streaming behind her like stabilizing fins. The nearest of the people in power suits grabbed at her, but she was already gone, and they were too timid to try jumping after her. Bull saw another of the enemy struggling with something. A gun. The massive glove was too thick to fit through the weapon's trigger guard. As Bull watched, the enemy snapped the guard off and settled the gun in its fist, like a child's toy carried by a large man. Bull fired at it a few more times without much hope of doing damage. 4 Earthers shouted with one voice and launched themselves at the one with a gun. The attacker didn't fire, just swept one big metal arm through the air, scattering Bull's people like they were sparrows. His people were going to get killed, were getting killed, and there was nothing he could do to stop it.
"Okay, kids," he said. Let's pack up and go home. It's getting too hot in here. Bull! Verbinski shouted. Watch a six!
Bull tried to swivel in the mech, but something hit him hard in the back. The magnetic feet creaked and lost their grip, and he was floating. The world all around began to shimmer gold and blue as his consciousness slipped away. He was aware, distantly, of a hand on his shoulder, slowing his fall. And he saw Naomi's face. Something had scraped her cheek, and she had a long bubble of blood clinging to her skin. He tried to turn, and failed.
That was right. No spine. He should have remembered that.
What?
He said.
They cut us off from the drum, Naomi said, and turned him so that his mech's feet could touch deck. The air was a debris field. Twists of metal and shattered ceramic, sprays of blood slowly coalescing and growing larger, like planets forming out of dust. Electricity arced from the ruins of a control panel, and the shattered glass floated in the tiny play of lighting. Two of the people in power armor stood rooted by the passage to the transition point. One held a rifle by the barrel as a club. The other had pistols with the trigger guard snapped off in either hand. A third was flailing in the air just above the maintenance shaft that they'd arrived through, struggling to get purchase on something. The fourth was shuffling across the deck toward them, its movements deliberate and controlled, to keep from kicking off into the air.
Elevator shaft airlock, Bull said. Fall back.
Everyone, Naomi said into her hand terminal. We're falling back to the elevator shaft on my go. Go! Naomi pulled him around, then attached herself to his back in rescue hold, and jumped. The enemy's guns opened fire. Bull caught a glimpse of a woman just as a bullet passed through her leg, saw the grimace on her face and the blood fountaining out of her.
I'm sorry, he thought.
The wall of the elevator shaft airlock loomed up, and Naomi pushed off from him, landing on the bulkhead with the grace of a woman born to zero-G. Two more bodies came through the space, Martian Marines, both of them. He recognized the man called Juarez, and the woman named Cass. Naomi slapped the controls, and the airlock doors began to collapse. Just as the opening seemed too narrow for a human form, two more came through. Sergeant Verbinski, and a man from Bull's side of the security force schism. Bull's head was swimming. He'd felt like he'd just run 20 miles in the hot New Mexican sun. He clapped his hands together, less to command the attention of the people in the lock, and more to bring himself back to awareness.
That shaft's in vacuum, he said. If that's the way we're going, we need to get suited up. Lockers are over there. Let's see what we've got to work with.
A massive blow rang against the airlock door. Then another.
Might want to hurry, he said.
You aren't going to fit, Verbinski said. Not with that contraption.
Yeah, Bull said. Okay.
Come on, big boy, the sergeant said. Let's get you out of that.
No, Bull wanted to say. I'm all right.
But Juarez and the other Marine were already shucking him out of his brace, then out of the mech that Sam had made for him. He was a cripple again. That wasn't true. He'd been crippled ever since the catastrophe. Now, he just had one fewer tool. He'd worked with less. The banging on the airlock door was getting louder, more intense. Along with the impact, there was something that sounded like tearing. He imagined the powered armor picking up handfuls of steel between massive fingers and pulling back, ripping at the skin of the ship. He clambered over to his mech, his body flowing out behind him, useless as a kite. He popped open the storage and took what was left of his pistol's ammunition and his hand terminal. For a moment, he didn't recognize the flat, black package that he took out next. And then he did.
If we're not staying here, we'd best leave, Verbinski said.
Let's go,
Bull said, pushing the grenades into the pouch on the EVA suit's thigh. Naomi cycled the door to the shaft. The sounds of the attack grew fainter and farther away as the air leaked out, and then the shaft was open below them. A full kilometer's fall to the trapped elevator, and then another past that to...
What? Ashford? Certain death?
Bull didn't know anymore what he was running from, or to. One by one, they pushed off, pulling themselves through the vacuum. Verbinski and the security man, Naomi and the Marine, then Bull and Juarez. Without discussing it, they'd all paired off with someone who wasn't theirs. In Bull's sagging mind, that seemed important.
Juarez, Verbinski said on the radio, and Bull was surprised to hear his voice.
Sir?
If you get a good shot, you think you could crack the visors on those suits?
Your suit, maybe, Juarez said. I keep mine in pretty good condition.
Do your best, Verbinski said.
Bull felt it when the enemy force breached the airlock. He couldn't even say what it was exactly. Some little press of a shockwave, a whisper-thin breath of atmosphere. He looked down past his dead feet, and there was light at the bottom of the shaft where there shouldn't have been. There were probably about 1,000 safety measures slamming down in engineering right now. He hoped so. Far below, he saw a muzzle flash, but they were so far ahead. The bullet almost certainly hit the sides of the shaft and spent itself before it could reach them. Juarez turned, his rifle steadied between his feet. The man's face went calm and soft, and the rifle flashed silently.
Got one, Verb, he said. And then,
Sergeant?
Verbinski didn't answer. He was still floating, skimming along the steel tracks that would guide the elevator, but his eyes were closed. His face was slack, and foam flecked his lips and nostrils. Bull hadn't even known the man was injured.
Sergeant!
Juarez yelled.
He's gone, Cass said.
The rest of the trip to the elevator was a thing carved from nightmares. Bull's body kept drifting wildly behind him, and his lungs felt full and wet. He'd stopped coughing, though. He didn't know if that was a good thing. Just as they reached the elevator, a lucky shot from their pursuers took the security man in the back, blowing out his air supply. Bull watched the man die, but he didn't hear it. The hatchway Corrin had burned through the elevator's base seemed too small to fit through, but he got one arm in, and Naomi pulled him in the rest of the way. In the body of the elevator car, Juarez took a position firing down the hole at the pursuers. Bull didn't know how much ammunition the Marine had, but it had to be getting close to the end of his supply. Bull would have slouched against the wall if there had been any gravity. Instead, he shifted his suit radio to the channel for Naomi.
Give me a gun, she said before he could speak. Give me something.
You keep going, he said. Get to the top of the shaft.
But
maybe you can get the hatch open for them. Get into command.
You can't access the controls from inside the shaft.
In this piece of shit boat, you never know, Bo said. Someone might have put a self-destruct button there. Wouldn't surprise me.
That's your plan B?
I think we're pretty much on plan Z at this point, Bo said. Anyway, you're the engineer. There's fuck all you can do here. And I heard you with Holden before. You might as well get to see him again. Not like it costs us anything.
He watched her face as she decided. Fear, despair, regret, calm. In that order. Impressive woman. He wished he'd had a chance to know her better. And if she was able to ship with Jim Holden and love him, maybe he wasn't as bad as Bull thought either.
Thank you, she said, then turned and launched herself along the elevator shaft.
toward command and her lover. That was sweet, Bull thought. Juarez's rifle flashed again, and Bull shifted his radio frequencies to include the two Marines.
You two should go too. Head up top. See if we can storm the command.
You sure? Cass said, her voice calm and professional. We've got cover here.
There won't be a better place farther up.
Yeah, pretty sure, Bull said.
What about you? Juarez asked.
I'm staying here, Bull said.
Okay, bro,
Juarez said. Then he and Cass were gone too. Bull thought about looking down through the shaft to see how close the enemy had come, but he didn't. Too much energy. And if he got shot in the eye at this point, well, that would just be sad. The little box of the elevator was a monochrome non-color, lit only by the backsplash from his own suit light. He took as deep a breath as he could. It was pretty shallow. He drew the grenades out from his pocket, one in either hand, and carefully dialed them down to the shortest fuse. So, he was going to die here. Not what he would have picked, but what the hell. It probably beat going back and having his spine grown back wrong. He'd seen guys who lived their whole lives in a drug haze, fighting the pain of a bad regrowth. He hadn't really let himself think about that before. Now, it was safe to. He tried to decide whether he regretted dying, but the truth was he was too fucking tired to care, and he couldn't breathe for crap. He was sorry he hadn't killed Ashford, but that wasn't new. He was sorry he couldn't avenge Sam or find out if Pa was alive, or whether Ashford would actually be able to destroy the ring. If he was sad about anything, it was that everything that was in motion now would keep on being in motion without him, and he'd never know how it went. Never know if anything he'd done had made a difference. His hand terminal blinked. A connection request from Monica Stewart. He wondered for a moment what she wanted with him, and then remembered that Ashford had stopped the drum. Things had to be for shit in there. He routed the request to his suit. No pictures, but the voice connection would be enough. Bull, the woman said, we're being attacked up here. I think Anna's dead. What the hell's going on down there? How much longer?
Well, we lost engineering, he said.
He felt a pang about Anna, but it was just one of many at that point.
Pretty much everyone in the attack party's dead now. Maybe five folks holed up in the elevator shaft. But the bad guys got the top and the bottom of that, so we're kind of screwed there. Managed to dump the core, but the grid's still up. It'll be enough to fire the laser. Ashford's guys are probably in engineering putting that back online, and I don't see we've got any damn way to stop him.
Oh my God, Monica breathed.
Yeah, it kind of sucks.
What are you going to do about it? A beam of light shone through the hatch in the floor. Tiny bits of dust and particulate metal glimmered in it like it was swirling in water. He watched it, with a half-smile on his face. It meant the bad guys were almost there, but it was pretty to look at. He remembered that Monica was on the line. She'd asked him something.
Yeah, Bull said. So, that thing where we power down the ship and save everyone? We're probably not going to do that.
You can't give up, she said. Please, there has to be a way.
Doesn't have to be, he thought, but didn't say.
Anna thought there was a way. Where did that get her?
But if there is, I hope one of you folks finds it. How bad is it in there? He asked.
It's terrible. It's like the catastrophe happened all over again.
Yeah, I can see that, Bull said.
We can't go on. Monica said. Oh God, what are we going to do? The light got stronger, brighter. He couldn't see the dust motes anymore from the shine of the light.
Monica, Bo said, look, I'm sorry, but I kind of got to go now, okay? You folks just do your best. Hold it together in there, all right? And hey, if it all works out?
Yes?
Tell Fred Johnson he fucking owes me one.
He dropped the connection, unplugged his hand terminal. He took a grenade in each hand, his thumbs on the release bars. A head poked up through the hatch, then back down fast. When no one shot at it, the head came back more slowly. Bull smiled and nodded at it, welcoming. The opaque cowling went clear, and he saw Casimir staring at him. Bull grinned. Well, that was a pleasure at least. A little treat on the way out.
Hey, Bull said, even though the man couldn't hear him. Hold this for me.
He tossed the two grenades and watched the man's expression as he understood what they were. Chapter 49. Anna. Anna returned to consciousness, floating in a tangled knot with Okju, the camera operator, two office chairs, and a potted ficus plant. Someone was setting off firecrackers in long strings. Someone else was shouting. Anna's vision was blurry, and she blinked and shook her head to clear it, which turned out to be a mistake, as shaking her head sent a spike of pain up her spine that nearly knocked her unconscious again.
What?
She tried to say, but it came out as a slushy
bleh
sound.
Christ, Red, I thought you were cooked there,
a familiar voice replied, rough but friendly. Amos.
I hated to think I broke my promise.
Anna opened her eyes again, careful not to move her head. She was floating in the center of what had been the studio space. Okju floated next to her, her foot tucked into Anna's armpit. Anna extricated her legs from the two office chairs they were twisted up in, and pushed the ficus away from her face. More firecrackers went off in long staccato bursts. It took Anna's muddled brain a few seconds to realize the sound was gunfire. Across the room, Amos was leaning against the wall next to the front door, taking a magazine out of his gun and replacing it with the smooth motion of long practice. On the other side of the door, one of the UN soldiers they'd picked up was firing at someone outside. Answering gunfire blew chunks of molded fiberglass out of the back wall, just a few meters from where Anna floated.
If you aren't dead, Amos said, then paused to lean around the corner and fire off a short burst, then you'll probably want to get out of the middle of the room.
Okju, Anna said, tugging on the woman's arm. Wake up. We need to move. Okju's arm flopped bonelessly when she pulled it, and the woman started slowly rotating in the air. Anna saw that her head was tilted at an acute angle to her shoulders, and her face was slack, and her eyes stared at nothing. Anna recoiled involuntarily, the lizard living at the base of her spine, telling her to get away from the dead person as quickly as possible. She yelped and pushed against Okju's body with her feet, sending it and herself floating away in opposite directions. When she hit the wall, she grabbed onto an LED sconce and held on with all her strength. The pain in her neck and head was a constant percussive throb. The sounds of gunfire didn't stop. Amos and his small, mixed band of defenders were firing out through every opening in the office space, several of which had been cut as gun ports. They were under attack. Ashford had sent his people to stop them. Anna's memories of the last few moments came back in a rush, the terrible screeching sound being hurled sideways at the wall. Ashford must have shut down the drum to stop them so that his gunmen could finish them off. But if Okju had been killed as a result of the sudden stoppage, then that same effect would have been repeated dozens, maybe hundreds of times throughout the makeshift community.